This week on the Finding Impact podcast, we're giving you the insider's view of accelerators with Fiwa Ndo, formerly with Mass Challenge.
FindingImpact.com. FindingImpact.com. Helping you scale your social business.
Hey everyone, my name is Andy Narricot. I'm the founder of Finding Impact, the podcast with social entrepreneurs for social entrepreneurs working in emerging markets. This is, consider this your virtual advisory network, the medium best to circulate knowledge and help you go further and faster for your social impact of your social enterprise in emerging markets. Today, I'm interviewing Fiwa Ndo, formerly of Mass Challenge, which is an accelerator out of Boston in the US, quite a well-known one. It's been running for quite a few years. So this episode is episode 3 of a 4-part series we're giving you on accelerators, all to help you decide if an accelerator is the right course for you and your early stage social enterprise. And then if you decide it is, then how best to choose one, what things to ask, what questions to ask of accelerators, what to expect when you go into accelerators, things like equity and others. So you are in a better position to make a decision. So we, on this episode, we talk about a number of things that can help you. We talk about the draw of an alumni network, which is really one of the biggest attractions that people say when they go into accelerators. We talk about the nonprofit model, so you don't give away equity versus the for-profit, where you have to give away some of your equity. We talk about that, and it's a wide-ranging interview. Really great to have Fiwa on the show. He's got a deep knowledge on this area, so that's what we aim to bring you. Okay, everyone, I hope you enjoy this. Make sure you check out the show notes at findingimpact.com. And while you're listening, I know you're listening on your device, and you may be involved commuting somewhere, walking the dog, whatever. If you could just quickly take a screenshot of your listening to it on your phone, on the app or whatever, and share it via social media. That's all you have to do. I know it's very difficult to do when you're out doing something else, but I would love it if you just took a quick screenshot. Just say, hey, I'm listening to the podcast. You can say what you liked, or just take a screenshot and say shout out, whatever. I really appreciate that. Okay, let's get into it. This is Fiwa Ndo. Hi everyone, I've got Fiwa Ndo here, and as part of giving you a look at accelerators from all sides, Fiwa used to work at a business accelerator. So he worked at Mass Challenge for 3.5 years, which is an accelerator based out of Boston.
Yeah.
He also spent some time in London with Mass Challenge as well, so helped set up the London version. He's also spent some time in Uganda as a country manager of WeFarm, which is a farmer information service, and is currently growth manager at Lambda School, also in Boston. So welcome, Fiwa.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Andy. I'm really happy. Really happy to be here talking to you.
Thank you. Well, thanks for coming on. I mean, as I say, what I'm coming at this is, well, people are listening, people are figuring out, is the accelerator right for me? And you've had some experience within an accelerator. So I think great to get another perspective from you to sort of add to it. Now, can you tell us a bit about what you were doing at Mass Challenge? What was your role there and the sort of program you were leading?
Yeah. So before I say that, it's good to add some context about Mass Challenge and what we did. So we're a startup accelerator, but one of the things that I thought was really compelling about our ethos, about our business model, is that we didn't take any equity from the startups that we supported. And in that sense, we focused on community as being really one of the best levers for helping a startup to succeed. And so we were massive. We still are massive. And in every cohort in Boston, at least, we would take in 120 startups across different industries, which is operationally much more challenging, or at least it's just very different from most startup accelerators.
Yeah, you just choose a few at a time.
Yeah, it meant that we had 25,000 square feet of office space, and that office space was always brimming with talent and ideas, and on any given day you could find upwards of 120 to 150 people working in one space. which is crazy. I mean, it's pretty much bigger than most WeWorks, really. But my role in the whole beast changed over time. So I joined during a really exciting time. It was about 2012, 2013, when startup accelerators weren't quite as ubiquitous, and so a lot of people didn't know what the hell we were doing with so many people working out of one office space. So my role in the beginning was really customer service. How do I connect entrepreneurs to resources that they need quickly? And so it was my job to know pretty much everyone in Boston startup ecosystem. The role was really cool. We called it startup concierge back in the day. The idea being, you know, act just like a concierge, get an entrepreneur what they need as quickly as you can. And if you can't, help them at least get the information. So I did that for about a year before I then moved to the UK, where I took on a role as a program manager, which was, you know, frankly, designing much more of the curriculum around the program and helping to recruit the mentors and get them engaged with the program. And then I finished my tenure with Mass Challenge as a director of global operations. We decided to franchise our business, and that meant that, kind of in the spirit of this community-driven or community-based leverage, we decided that we'd franchise the business such that in different cities, Mass Challenge would look a little bit different. So we had offices in Mexico City, in Jerusalem, in London, in Lausanne, Switzerland, and each of these places, you know, was a little bit different, but Mass Challenge was still offering the same sort of service. And I think that local context helped us, because really, since we weren't taking any equity from our startups, our money was coming from sponsors, and we were able to, you know, secure sponsors that were relevant to the different contexts.
Yeah. Theo, can I ask, so when you say you leverage a community, is that, do I understand that to mean, like, because you're a nonprofit, you can actually go out and seek resources from businesses and corporates in the area?
That's right. And I want to provide the caveat, which is that it may come across as if that makes things easier, but it doesn't, or at least it didn't. But that's right. I mean, I think that we took an approach, which was that there's probably, well, operating with a startup accelerator at that scale, there's probably something out there in the community that can help just about anyone. It's just about figuring out where to connect, tie the thread, right? So out of the 120 startups, there's probably someone who can benefit, for example, from being connected to Gillette or P&G in Boston. There's probably someone that can benefit from being connected to Verizon. There's probably someone who can benefit from being connected to MIT, a robotics lab or a 3D printing lab, right? And so the idea was that we actually left really no stone. There was no stone that was left unturned, in the sense that we wanted everyone to know about what we were doing, so that when the time was right, they could make a connection that could be mutually beneficial. And I say it's much easier said than done, because again, I started doing this at a time when no one really cared much for startups. You know, I mean, it wasn't as sexy as it is now. So a lot of entrepreneurs, people wouldn't even take meetings with. So we were the ones who had to help people take meetings with those entrepreneurs, take them seriously.
And is this just for any startup, sort of profit based, or was it just for social impact based? Or
yeah, so it was for any startup, which I think was pretty funny. I mean, it was pretty funny in the sense that we were a not for profit, and we also accepted entrepreneurs who were starting not for profit businesses. But there were very few startups that were not a good fit for our program. The only thing I would probably point out is that we were taking very early stage startups. I mean, we were frankly, we weren't really looking for entrepreneurs that had already raised a good bit of money. A lot of the startups that joined our program had not even raised any angel funding and hadn't even navigated the landscape of investment in any particular city. For the most part, we had people who had really good ideas and had taken pen to paper and had done a little bit of work trying to find product market fit by talking to potential users. But for the most part, people hadn't even built anything. I mean, like, these were people who had a really good idea and maybe a really crappy logo and maybe a really, really, really crappy MVP. But so they really needed help. And so our curriculum was also really important in terms of giving them a sense for what they needed to do next in their journey.
Yeah. With that many startups, I mean, you must have seen quite a few go to significant growth by now. Have you?
Oh yeah. 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 So, we had a pretty crazy program in that when I think of all the ones that have been successful through our program, they cover every gamut really. So one of my favorites is a company called Flywire, which makes international transactions easier, especially for young people, students traveling abroad. And they're still based in Boston now. And they went on to raise tens of millions and now have a team of upwards of maybe 150 plus people. I could be getting those tiny details wrong, but in any event, I mean, they've grown to be pretty massively successful. We had a company that actually became quite popular in the UK called Handy. I think you may be familiar with them if you've ever booked a home cleaning service. And they pretty much launched and scaled very quickly, finding a vertical that was in high demand, and a number of others, obviously, across the industry.
So you might, I can understand from an accelerator perspective that this is a hugely interesting opportunity or something to consider, because you don't have to give away any equity. And we heard from our last interview that was really big, consideration when being accepted into an accelerator. But do you think, in that case, someone was taking some of their equity and, there were only 10 or people going in? So this is a completely different accelerator because there's 120 odd startups. You may be not getting as much sort of hands-on support, dedicated support, do you think? Because there's a landscape of the way of, different lands of different accelerators can work with startups, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So let me make sure I get it right, because I parsed kind of two questions there. The first effectively being about this model, which is no equity. And I could speak to that for a little bit, but I want to make sure I cover the second bit, which is when the program is so large, how do the entrepreneurs effectively get support, right? To the first, the no equity bit, yeah. I mean, I stand behind this 100%. I think that if you're at a stage where your business is so early that you haven't even started, generating any sort of, you haven't even started taking in any revenue whatsoever, then I think it's people will have different opinions around this, but I strongly believe that it's important not to take on any debt, any additional debt, right? I think it's simple. I mean, I think oftentimes about the way that I was raised and the way that we're meant to think about personal finances, which is to say, if I haven't even built anything product-wise, I haven't even brought on a team, and I haven't even found any customers to actually buy the thing I'm building, then I think it's such a tremendous risk to take any outside investment, because you're going to owe it back, but you may not have ran through the hurdles, the jumps and the barriers that you need to, in order to actually assure yourself that you're going to be able to pay that back. And so I felt quite strongly about that. And I definitely felt quite strongly about that with regard to the entrepreneurs that came through our program. But, you have to keep in mind that, different strokes for different folks.
Yeah.
And so there are some entrepreneurs who happen to have a few signals that tell them that the idea that they have is going to be something big. Maybe that signal is, you're well connected. And so I think in some cases, if you're well connected, if you have that type of privilege where you're able to hire really high quality engineers quickly, or you're able to connect with strong, trustworthy investors quickly, then I don't think that's something that you should ignore, and perhaps your circumstances are different. But for most of us, I think that it's probably best to tip the favor scales accordingly, and make sure that you really build a product that starts to generate a little bit of revenue before taking on that investment. So I think that's great. I mean, the other thing I would say is, in the accelerator context, the thing that we really tried to emphasize is how much free stuff you should be fighting to get as an entrepreneur, right? And I say this a bit ironically, because I'm sitting from a WeWork, but I say that because I'm not actually currently paying for this WeWork, right? Which now I've said on the podcast. But the idea is I think there's so much stuff that can be shared, right? So let's say, for example, you know someone who has an office space with an extra seat. It's just like how you might ask a friend who has a spare couch to let you share space with them, right? Having the confidence and the courage within yourself to ask for stuff, ask for favors, ask for help, I think it begets something quite good, which is that you then just end up giving it back later on. No one feels great about always asking for stuff, but as an entrepreneur, getting into that habit is actually about unlocking opportunities that you didn't know were there. And so whether it's office space, or whether it's an introduction to a lawyer who's going to really help you get that patent that you need, or introduction to an investor who happens to really connect with the idea that you're trying to sell, it's important to keep asking. And that's what Mass Challenge was about, is asking for free stuff.
Yeah, no, I'm a big ask, you know, believer in that as well. And I've seen a few books around, one recently I heard about by Amanda Palmer called The Art of Asking, How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Let People Help. And she's got a TED talk as well, like 10 million views about the art.
Oh, wow.
So I'm going to check that out. any other, have you heard of any books about this? Like advice?
You don't know. It's funny because as you're telling me this, I'm scribbling it down and I'm thinking to myself, oh man, I clearly wasn't the first person to think about this concept of asking for stuff. But as I was talking about it, I was like, oh my God, this is a novel concept. Like, I should be telling people about this. And, you know, pulling the rug out from under my feet. But no, you know, I don't. I think that, you know, lean startup methodology and that's, I think, something that's really important for anyone who's starting their journey around entrepreneurship. And I guess I'll tell you one that I'm reading right now is How Google Works, written by Eric Schmidt and a few others. Mm. And I think the idea, which is interesting, is just to remember that asking for something is not the same thing as begging, right? That's I think the important distinction to make, because I personally struggle with the idea of asking for stuff. It almost makes you feel helpless or weak or vulnerable to the point of imagining that people think less of you. But I think in reading parts of How Google Works, which I'm reading now, you begin to realize that actually even the biggest companies are asking for stuff, and they're making much bigger asks as well, right? They're asking for, you know, like write-offs of millions of dollars. They're asking, you know, they're asking for huge things. It's just at a different scale, but it doesn't mean that you shouldn't be operating much the same way if you're trying to achieve much the same thing. So I think that this culture, this art of asking is something that's important, and it becomes quite powerful if you use it well.
Yeah, brilliant. And that is the kind of basis to an accelerator, right? And that was your role in a way, that concierge was going to ask people. And I can understand the ask as a nonprofit, and you sort of come with this expectation, hey, help me, I'm helping people in emerging markets. But if you're just a startup, you know, you've just got to be good at that.
And therein lies, you know, probably my greatest criticism, frankly, is, and I'll say it outright, which is that if I'm going out there asking for stuff on behalf of an entrepreneur at an accelerator, then what is the entrepreneur doing, right? And that's that's an important question, because I think I have two opinions on it. The first, which is a really critical opinion, is that if you do a lot of that early for an entrepreneur, and you do enough of it that they're able to reach some sort of level of perceived success before actually doing the hard work of asking for stuff and going out there and whatnot, then I think something's lost in terms of like training or, you know, cultivating that day one mentality that Jeff Bezos talks about for Amazon. And I think something's lost that I think it's important for people to be cautious of, right? And so even in my role at Mass Challenge, I remember I spent a lot of time having a lot of, let's say, doing a lot of ping pong with entrepreneurs. And it wasn't because I didn't want to help them, but it was because, you know, you have to teach a man or woman how to fish, right? The greatest value out of the accelerator isn't that I was able to connect someone with a lawyer. It's that I was able to give them more awareness about the fact that they can connect with people that they didn't think that they could connect with before, you know, giving them that sort of confidence and even to some extent like hubris to be able to knock on a door and say, I want to take this meeting. This is what the problem I'm trying to solve. And I think that you're the right person for the meeting. Right. I don't think like traditional schooling typically like cultivates that in people very well. No. And so in that sense, I think that an accelerator can do that job of just pushing people to act like they're running a business.
Yeah.
And start doing that fast. So that's my criticism. But, and it's a big but, I think the other side of it is there's just a lot of stuff to do as an entrepreneur, right? There's a shit ton of stuff to do as an entrepreneur. And I'm fooling myself if I think that, you know, getting someone access to a great example would be like Amazon AWS credits are very valuable at the early stage of running your business, because if you have to pay for them out of pocket, you just don't have the money to actually build your product.
Sorry, what is that? Amazon AWS credits.
Yeah, so like AWS credits, Amazon Web Services. And that would just basically unlock this ability for people to get these benefits. And sometimes people would win up to $50,000 worth of Amazon Web Services credits, which just allows them to build their
transact online
business. Yeah, and transact online. I mean, that stuff's hugely valuable, but that's the kind of thing that an accelerator can unlock pretty easily.
Absolutely.
By saying, you know, look, we have all these entrepreneurs here. If you guys give us these credits, then you might actually get these entrepreneurs as customers for life. So AWS says, sure, absolutely, here you go. Yeah. And that saves an entrepreneur a ton of money. I mean, it's hard to argue that.
Huge value there that accelerators can give to entrepreneurs, you know, and it's not just, you know, back to my question. I did wanted to touch on this question quickly again about the program so large and, you know, support. But just by being part of an accelerator, you have, big or small, you have the access to the community, those resources, you know, and that massive alumni network with a much bigger cohort as well. You have a much bigger alumni network. Maybe you can talk a little bit to that, you know, less one-on-one support maybe because the cohort's so big.
Yeah, so this is an amazing thing. I mean, I think that this is something that a lot of people are still working on, but having access to upwards of thousands of people who've been through it before, who are like-minded and feel some sort of like will to help out, is essentially the best thing you can have in the world, because it means that you'll never be lost, right? If you use that network wisely. I think it's why like Harvard and Oxford are heralded, because they have over time, thousands and thousands of successful alumni who also love to give back. But it's becoming clear that the Y Combinators of the world and the Mass Challenges of the world have this sort of secret sauce, which means that it becomes really difficult to fail if you get accepted into one of these accelerators and you have the right mindset, because the network won't let you fail. They don't want you to fail. It's not in their interest for you to fail. And so as soon as you get good at, you know, being authentic and asking for help in the right way, that help will start, you know, flooding you. I mean, it could literally drown you, the amount of support you can get. So I think that for us, the thing I want to note is that community stuff's really hard, right? Especially in a global economy. So in Mass Challenge, we have a global startup accelerator. It's great to have access to all these people, but what the hell are you going to do about it if you don't know how to connect these people, or you don't know what they do, or you can't get really quick, easy insight into who they are and where they are, right? Like the idea of having a phone book, like a paper, literally a paper phone book, one of those thick, you know, like, you know, phone books is
stupid,
because a telephone directory, no one's going to go through a telephone directory for days, flipping through it, trying to find someone. And that's where technology becomes really important. So at Mass Challenge, we spent a lot of time, we like to think of ourselves as a tech company, and we spent a lot of time building technology to support the facilitation of these connections. So essentially that means creating a directory with great search engine optimization and whatnot, where you can go in and search like who within this wide network knows a thing or two about patents and is also in the UK and also happens to have had some experience working in the US, right? You can actually filter down to that level and find like the four or five people who fit that criteria. Or, you know, who's the entrepreneur who has started a, B2B business in healthcare and also happens to be based in California, right? Like that kind of thing is really powerful because then you can start to move more quickly as opposed to spending time searching. So I haven't been there for a little while, right? So I can't tell you the state of things now, but I think that was really powerful. Once we were able to build that and unlock it, that's what told me that, okay, we have a business model that's scalable because this is the secret sauce. This will never go away. And Y Combinator does it really well. They have their blog, which is open, you can openly access it, even you or I, even though we never went through Y Combinator. And I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So you have this incredible alumni network, which is obviously one of the biggest values of Mass Challenge. Yeah. Because sheer size of startups going in there, but you have the less one-on-one support. So if someone is wanting, you know, training and sort of upskilling in very quickly, maybe it's not for them.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that's, I'll tell you what, I think that's a bit of a leading question, but I do agree.
It is an incredibly leading question, but that's what I'm summarizing. Like it's benefits in some areas, but not so good in other areas, like in a smaller.
I guess it depends though, right? Like one of the things that's really funny about having a cohort of 120 entrepreneurs, and that means, you know, anywhere from 200 to 300 people, if each company has about, you know, let's say a co-founder pair or a founder plus one other person, then you're basically in like a schoolroom, right? Like a huge schoolroom or schoolhouse. Hmm. And that means that you're going to find that some of the same dynamics that you see when you're like a teenager in a schoolhouse come into effect in the accelerator program, which is to say that the people who are best at navigating big social environments and making connections quickly and moving fast are going to like, you know, to the victor goes the spoils, so to speak. I mean, this is like Hunger Games. It's like a gladiator thing. If you enter an accelerator that has that many people and you end up being the best in the accelerator, then you're going to have a good time. Like, and that's what I found was really funny is like, there's always that one person that you can point them out after maybe day one or day two, and you'll say to yourself, you know, this person is going to end up, you know, our program was also a competition. So we also offered prize money to the top entrepreneur who was judged by expert judges who are picked from within that community. So maybe a successful entrepreneur, a successful investor, someone who's working in a corporate in an innovation or something. Like we would choose a spread of judges who would evaluate and judge who's the best entrepreneur in the program. And you could win up to $100,000, like a cash prize, a grant, right? And that's a lot of money. And if you can fight, I mean, if you can literally fight like a gladiator to be the best entrepreneur, you only have to be the best within your cohort, right? And so it's like school in that sense. So I'd say that, yeah, for the majority, it's probably not for you, but if you really think, if you have like the gravitas or the, I don't know, the gumption to go through a program like that, then you could actually stand to benefit a lot. And I think that's important to keep in mind. And I think that's what entrepreneurship is, right? Is can you fight your way to the top, amidst, everything else?
Absolutely.
And everyone else matters, right? But in entrepreneurship, there are usually a few who stand out.
Yeah. Now, Fiwa, you've sort of had a very unique position of being within an accelerator and for quite a few years and been in several different, couple of countries doing that, and now where you are at the moment. I mean, now you're sort of looking out in, you've seen how the accelerator program has, when it started out, when, you know, startups were new maybe, and, you know, and it's evolved somewhat, but do you think it's evolved enough? I mean, what do you see, just as sort of a broad sort of question, what do you see as the current state of the accelerator, you know, market, so to speak, and is it fit for purpose? What needs to change?
Yeah, I don't personally like the current state of the accelerator market. I'll tell you, there's two reasons. One is because I think it breeds a bit of entitlement that I don't appreciate that much. I think like for example, getting into an accelerator is great, but it feels like some sort of equivalent to me as like someone getting into Harvard or Oxford and thinking that they made it, you know, or getting into MIT and thinking that they've suddenly made it, right? Mm. Which is to say that like I don't think the measure of a man or a woman is their ability to get accepted into a program, right?
Well, no, it's the profitability and scale, right? I mean, that's the...
Exactly, exactly, right. And I know it sounds like an obvious point, but increasingly I find that now a lot of entrepreneurs that I find that get into one of these programs and paste it like on their LinkedIn profile or on their Twitter are almost using that as a cover for the work that they haven't done or the success that they haven't gotten yet. And that's a bit scary because I don't think that it's right for people to believe that someone has done something that they haven't yet just because they've gotten into a place, right?
Right.
Because there's only a finite number of spots available for a mass challenge or a Y Combinator or 500 startups, whatever. And that means that to me, it feels like a little bit of a race to the bottom, right? And that's where like my harshest criticism comes is it's like, honestly, all this stuff, all the free stuff that you can get from Accelerator, it's really great. And I think that for most people, you should try to go for it if you think that that Accelerator offers you what you need, but it doesn't take away from like the actual hard work of
yeah, doing the work. I mean, at the end of the day, if your business has got to succeed,
it couldn't be made more obvious, but I think like about a story which really resonates in my mind, which is like why I got started with Mass Challenge and like working in entrepreneurship in the first place is when Mass Challenge started, we were able to convince a property management company to let us take up about 20,000 square feet of brand new, high rise, 14th floor, Seaport of Boston, overlooking the water office space for free for 5 years.
What?
And the building was brand new and it was a part of Boston that a lot of people were looking at as like the new frontier for business, like law firms were coming in, investment companies were coming in, but there was one floor that wasn't sold yet. And we convinced the property management company to let us take that floor because we would imbue in that area of Boston an appreciation for entrepreneurship and for innovation and for starting new business. And we would imbue a culture that wasn't there before. And it worked. I mean, that was where we started. That was where I first started working. And in that office space, we did nothing. So if you look at a traditional contemporary office space now, rather, you'll see that it's fit out with everything, like the nicest things, even like the door handles and the doors cost more than cost thousands and thousands of dollars. And so there's a lot that's spent on office space. We spent nothing. So it was literally just a building, but the floor was still the same, like a cement or whatever floor. The ceilings, you could see all the wires all over the ceilings because nothing was covered. And now that's the cool thing to do, right? But in those days, we couldn't afford a ceiling, so we didn't have lights. We had to install all of our own light fixtures. We had to install all of our own internet. We had to bring in our own printer that would serve everyone in the office. Okay. We had to. The best part is, frankly, that we had entrepreneurs building their own desks because we got the desks for like a subsidized rate, but we didn't have enough manpower. We didn't have enough staff to build the desk. So we said, look, if you want to work here, you have to build your own desk. And so we would hand out, screwdrivers and stuff to the entrepreneurs when they joined the program, were building their own desks. And all of this stuff is to say that like, you don't have to do this to be an entrepreneur, but I think it makes a big difference to look at your experience and realize, no, you're actually not privileged, but what you do have is you have a lot of people who are here to do it with you, right? Mm-hmm. That's like the magic, is that there are people who are also willing to go through the fight, who go through the battle. But now everything's a bit flowery, I think, and people expect once they get an Accelerator to have like, beer on tap, et cetera. And people, like, I've talked about this sort of stuff, but I do think the important part to mention is like, it's about being with people who are willing to fight in the trenches with you, because that's what makes you resilient. That's what makes you tough and able to weather the storms.
Yeah. So just quickly then, a couple of things that need to change
I think a lot of accelerators will just stay because they're continuing to offer something really valuable to entrepreneurs. And I think that's actually really fantastic. I think what we're already seeing is we're seeing more challenge with the business model of startup accelerators, especially local startup accelerators, which is to say that, there's a reason why there's so many more successful startup accelerators in major cities like New York City or Silicon Valley. It's just a huge, like there's huge access to capital and investment capital. And so that makes a big difference. It's not the same in every city. And so we'll see, I think, more corporate style accelerators, which aren't necessarily bad, but it just means that you have to be a bit more careful about who the value is for, right? I find that some corporate accelerators tend to try and capture value for their clients and whatnot, which is good for some reasons, but it's not necessarily aligned with the incentives of the entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. So I think we'll see a lot more of that. But the other thing I think is that we'll just see a change, which is that entrepreneurship is kind of a life cycle. So when I joined Mass Challenge in 2013, a lot of the entrepreneurs that were in that program when I joined and I was helping them build their startups are no longer working on those startups, right? That's just what happens, right? Like some companies are still doing well and are doing quite successful, doing quite well and are successful. But a majority of folks are no longer with the startups that they set out to build in the first place. However, a lot of those people are still very successful because they're entrepreneurs, right? They knew their expectations were managed. So they knew that there was a chance that this wasn't going to work out. And their priorities change over time. Maybe they had more children or they got married or they had a new idea. And so the real idea is, how do you support an entrepreneur through the life cycle of entrepreneurship? And that's cool. I think that WeWork is doing a good job of like trying to support that by providing a space for people to reconnect with one another. But I think the most important thing is actually looking early on. It's like, how do we support people from the beginning of their journey of becoming an entrepreneur? So what I love about Mass Challenge, what I think I'd love to see more of is kind of the stuff that I'm seeing at Lambda School, which is, how do you teach people to code early on, but also how do you teach them about entrepreneurship and what it's like to be an entrepreneur early on? Because I went to a liberal arts school. I went to a school called Bowdoin here in the States, in Maine, and I loved my experience. However, a liberal arts college experience does not really provide you with the tools and the skills that you, doesn't provide you with all the tools that you need to be successful in a startup. It doesn't give you that practical experience in building a company. And so I think an accelerator is a great bridge to that. I think coding schools are a great bridge to that, like Lambda School. And I think we're going to see a lot more of that. Like, how do you help people between the ages of, let's say, like 18 and 22 for like summer internships and stuff? Like, I could totally imagine during the summers, these spaces being full of bright college students as interns. I mean, a lot of them already are. But that those students are not only learning new skills like how to code or how to do product marketing, but also how to actually operate in a startup and be a successful employee, so there isn't such a gap between finding a job and graduating college.
Yeah.
Or just turning 18 and finding a job, frankly. Getting a degree isn't your thing.
Awesome. Yep, that's been extremely useful. We're out of time now, but Fiwa, thank you for coming on and giving us your perspective.
Yeah, I loved it.
Challenge. And sort of seeing what it's like from within and providing, I mean, so many people have got, I think, a lot of good understanding about, more nuanced understanding about what to look out for and how to match themselves to the right kind of accelerator. So thank you very much.
Love it. Yeah. And feel free to share my details, Twitter, wherever it needs to be shared. If anyone has any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Awesome.
Thank you.
And that was Fiwa Ndo, formerly of Mass Challenge in Boston. I hope you enjoyed that. Make sure you check out the show notes on findingimpact.com. And I really appreciate it if you just give us a quick shout out, take a screenshot of your app while you're listening on your phone and or on the webpage, but just share it out. Share it out on social media, on Facebook, LinkedIn. Really great to share it on that platform as well. All right, everyone. I hope you enjoyed that third episode in our four-part series. We haven't found the guest for the next one yet, mind you, but we're hoping to bring you a fourth episode. And make sure you tune in for that. Not that you tune in anymore on a podcast. You press play, but you know what I mean. That's it. Have a great week.
FindingImpact.com. Helping you scale your social business.